I am so excited to have Alicia Bozarth here again. We have been enjoying her interview and learning so much, and we just can't wait to talk to her again. I am Tamara Lynn Kraft. I am one of the Mount Zion Ridge Press managing editors, and here is my partner in crime.
Hi, I'm Michelle Levine, co-guilty party. We've been having a lot of fun talking to Alicia, and we're glad that you are back to continue the discussion of Faith Unraveled.
Thank you.
Well, I know that you blog and you wrote this devotional, and those were two ways you dealt with grief. Are there other ways that you help others deal with their grief?
I would say those are my main ways. I also have a Facebook page where I try to interact and post things that often deal with grief, the fight for faith, the struggle for hope, things like that. My tagline is "Hope grows in the wilderness." So I try to keep to that on my Facebook page. But yeah, the blogging, the writing, the Facebook page, eventually I hope in my fiction, it can also touch on some of these things to really encourage those truths that we can really sink our feet into, even when our emotions and our soul are completely bonkers.
Let's shift gears a little bit, pull back from the book itself to your life, your experiences, the things that make you you. What is your favorite book written by another author? Maybe something that has spoken to you and fed you either during this process, or maybe something you've discovered since you went through these huge changes in your life.
Yeah. I'm more of a fiction reader than a nonfiction reader. Irony there, which is probably why I'm focusing more on fiction. That's just always what I've read more of. I would say if there's any favorite book, I would actually have to go way back to the book A Voice in the Wind by Francine Rivers. That is the book that even, 15 years later, probably has been the book that has stuck with me the most. If I felt like I went to church after I read that, there were so many scriptures that came along, alive to me when I was reading that, because it's set in the Roman Empire days, just a little bit after the New Testament was written. And so there was just so much research I know she did that just brought a lot of the Roman culture alive, which in turn brought a lot of the scriptures alive that was written in the epistles. And so that, and I also just really related to the character, because the main character in that, she struggles with fear, because she's living in the day and age when obviously as a Christian, you could be martyred and you could be persecuted for your faith. And so she's this young girl that's just terrified of being persecuted and found out to be a believer. And as a young person, when I read that, I was probably in my mid-20s, and I resonated so much because I had dealt with a lot of those same fears. Like, I love you, Lord, but please don't make me go through any of these terrible things that the early church had to go through, which would in turn go like, well, how serious am I about my faith? And it really challenged me to watch this character go through and to grow in her fears. And it's the only book I can ever remember sobbing for. Like, yes, I read books where my, tears pricked my eyes and it kind of stirred the heartstrings. But at the end of this book, I can still remember where I was. I was sobbing at the end of my bed, about ready to throw the book across the room. And luckily she wrote a sequel that helped.
But it did elicit a very strong reaction at the end of that book. It's one, yes, of my favorites, but I was like reading it, and at the end I was like, Francine, you can't do this to the character. You just can't. Hadessa has become such a strong person in our lives. You can't,
right? And I totally get on Francine's side, like, things don't always, as my book illustrates, my life story illustrates, and so many others, life doesn't always end up with a happily ever after. Sometimes terrible things happen. And so I appreciate her doing that in the sense that, the character didn't just get an escape route. God doesn't always give us an escape in that way. But for the sake of story and for the sake of the reader, yes, she created a sequel, and she did create quite a story after some of the main events of that story. But as far as my favorite book ever, it would have to be that. And I still own the series, and I'll probably one day reread it for the third or fourth time, because it is a very powerful book.
I agree. I love that whole series.
Yeah. Gets you to thinking, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Getting personal again, what is your process for writing? Do you have any rituals you have to do before you start writing? Or do you have to write in a certain place every time or a certain time? Or how do you do this?
I would say none of the above. I'm completely chaotic. I have no idea.
That's awesome.
Chaos writers unite.
The process probably for fiction and something like what my devotional is, nonfiction, is probably very different, because for the fiction, you're very much, it's a creative, very different creative process for me. Kind of have to get my mind in the game, get my mind, you know, every time I sit down to, like, if I have like, oh, I have 30 minutes, let me go do, I can't really do that with my fiction because I've got to get my mind in the zone. For the devotional, something like that, that is not as hard for me. So like when I would have an idea for one of the entries, it was pretty easy for me to just sit down and just expand on that idea, whatever that truth was that really hit me. I could just sit down, plop out a rough draft of that entry, and then I would come back, you know, a couple of days later with some fresh eyes, read it again, fine tune it, and on it would go. So that was kind of my process for the devotional, you know, here and there. And I didn't have to get in the zone. I could just do whatever, whenever. Fiction, very different. When I first started writing, I had a desk, and I would just sit at my desk and work. And then I created this nice office for myself, this writing office, roomed where it was all set aside for that. And even though, unfortunately, I hardly ever use it right now because air conditioning gets the room so cold that I don't even want to be in there. But so I think lately I've just been working on my bed. I just sit on my bed, bring my laptop and sit and work. Or when my daughter's at drama practice, I bring my laptop and I sit in the car and I work. Or like I said, it's a little bit chaotic. It's just whatever.
Okay, well, that kind of cancels out the next question I was going to ask was, what's your office like? Oh. I know you said it's cold. So you basically, you have a mobile office. It's wherever you're able to sit down for a few minutes,
you know,
and record
something.
Yeah, you
know, when you've got a busy life, you beauty of laptops, you know, you just take your work with me. And we live kind of out in the country. So every time we go, say we go into town, because we literally are kind of driving into town for any errands. And so me trying to save gas and trying to be efficient, you know, so if I'm taking my daughter to something and it's going to be 2 hours, I don't want to drive there, drive home 20 minutes just to, you know, an hour later, drive another 20 minutes and back. So usually if I'm taking them to something that's only going to be, you know, 1, 2, 3 hours, I'll just bring my laptop, unless I have errands to run. I might have errands to run, but I'll just bring my laptop and I'll just, you know, work on something for a little bit and do that. But my writing office itself, you know, it's very pretty. It's a nice light blue with white and gray accents, kind of like a garden themed. I have some plants that I forgot to water over the holidays that are kind of droopy now. So I'm looking at them going, poor babies, they kind of got forgotten. Yeah. But, you know, I definitely wanted to create a nice calming space. But unfortunately, you know what happens with a spare room that, you know, doesn't have a big vital role in family life is it becomes exactly that, a spare room. And so you have something that you don't know where it goes, it gets stuck in the room. And so now I just have various stuff sitting here, and it's not quite as cozy as it should be for a nice environment for myself. But
my office is like that. I keep thinking, when I finish this next project, I'm going to rid out my office and get it reorganized again. I mean, for our listeners, we're recording this on Zoom, and then Tamara edits everything down and turns it into an audio file and gets rid of all of our glitches and the dog barking and things like that. So we can see Alicia, and there's two pictures we can see in the image, and there's some colored note cards taped to the wall and a nice comfy chair and real pretty color of the wall. So it looks like you've got a nice, serene office to work in, but you don't work there, do you?
Well, Well, I keep on telling myself I need to get back into it. You know, right now it's the winter and it's not too cold because I could turn on the heater, but it's the summertime when the air conditioner is like, whew, I've even closed the vents and it still gets cold in here. I don't know what else to do.
Wow. Well, now we've come to the most important question of the podcast. This question may determine our working relationship in the future. Don't mean to scare you, but what is your favorite kind of tea?
Oh my goodness, favorite kind of tea. Well, I'm more of a coffee drinker myself, but I do like tea also. So hopefully that's a nice middle ground for us here. Lately I've been drinking English breakfast tea. I bought at Costco. They had a whole canister. It was a really cute, like retro looking canister. I just had to buy it and it had English breakfast tea in it. Just regular black tea, English breakfast tea, any of that. I don't really do all the other varieties of teas that much, just the regular black tea. But I do, I grew up with my dad doing it. I think it's more of like the British way, you know, to where you have hot brew tea and you do milk and sugar in it. And so that's the way I do it. I've just grown up that way. And so if I do go to Scotland or England, I think I'll fit in. Besides, I'll probably drink it way sweeter than they do. But, you know, one or two cubes of sugar, give me like 4 or 5, please.
Well, our working relationship is solid then.
Okay. It's safe.
It's safe. English breakfast is totally acceptable.
Yes. All right.
With Scottish shortbread.
Yeah.
That's even better.
And milk and sugar or honey.
Honey. Yeah.
Works. My teas, I use the tea leaves. So the canister, did you buy? Were they tea leaves or bags of tea?
No, it's still bags. It was still our American version of bag tea, yes. I've never used fresh leaves. That would be interesting to try. And I watch a lot of British period dramas and things like that. And, you know, you see them with their little, I don't even know what it's called, but the little thing
infuser.
That they put over the teacup that has their tea leaves in it, you know, and pour the water through. So, yeah, I wondered about that, but nope.
Yeah, that's what I do. Every time I get a cup of tea, which is every morning and sometimes every evening.
Yeah. Just me and coffee every morning, every afternoon. Sometimes I do tea in the afternoon, depending. But yeah.
Well, that works.
Yeah. It's getting so I have a whole cabinet full of tea paraphernalia. People are giving me teapots.
Well, Michelle, Michelle can tell you, I have a cabinet on the end of my island that is just filled with tea and tea paraphernalia.
Okay. Well, you know, if you're going to do it, might as well be cute while you do it and have your teapots and have your teacups and all your little stuff. Might as well.
Absolutely.
And you find the places that you like to go to that you know you can find loose leaf tea. Because it's really hard to find them. You can't find it in the grocery store.
Probably so, yeah.
My husband orders mine online from a couple of different tea companies. So,
yeah, I know you had talked about, I'm especially interested in your time slip story that you were talking about earlier. But what plans do you have for future writing? Are you going to focus on the time slip, or are you going to go back to the grief story, or is there maybe something else that is starting to catch your attention and you're starting to brainstorm and daydream about that? Anything we can look forward to?
Honestly, you know, I don't know. Like, as a new author, when you hit the market, you know, I don't know how easy it is. Like if my time slip is the one that hits first, let's say. I don't know if you're following your readership would then expect most, if not all, you know, the future books to kind of follow that same pattern, or if you kind of could switch either way. When I first started, I did everything contemporary. And as I would talk to people, they're like, well, what do you read more of? Well, I probably read more historical probably than I do contemporary, but I could do, you know, either one, which is kind of the benefit, I guess, of the time slip. You kind of get a little bit of both. So I'm not sure. This is my first project where I've done anything with the historical writing, which is different, and definitely my first time with trying to do the two timelines. So I don't know, you know, part of me has played around with ideas of like, do I want to go back and take my first book and redo it? Do I want to, I don't necessarily want all my books to focus on grief, you know, because that would be kind of boring. I think as a reader, I follow this author and she always writes about the same subject, but I definitely do want to focus on the principles underneath. What I've always built my platform on is the truth of scripture, that foundation that our feelings don't necessarily define our decisions, our faith. We can hold on to those truths of scripture and battle our emotions and take those truths of scripture and battle those things that are in our soul, you know, those weaknesses and those doubts and those struggles, you know. So those things I would keep in my fiction writing and in my stories. And I've even, as I've been writing this current novel, I'm trying to figure out and really pinpoint, okay, what does my character, what is her wound and what does she really grow from? And what is the truth that really penetrates her? Because you want your reader to be able to walk away with that same encouragement, you know, that they might not have gone through the exact same things as the character, but they can still learn that simple truth, that spiritual truth, and walk away with that taking root in their own lives. So that I would stick through. And that's what I want to focus on, be the kind of writer that someone, kind of like Francine book, that someone can walk away feeling that they just went to church and they just got encouraged in something, in their own faith and in their own lives.
Well, that's all we have for now. We hope in the future to have another interview with Alicia when she turns into another book to us. Not putting any pressure on her, but we're really looking forward to seeing more. Remember, through the end of February, you can get $1 off print or ebook of her grief devotional, Faith Unraveled, using the code FAITH, all capital letters, right there on our website. Thanks for coming, and we look forward to meeting again with you with our next author interview at Books on the Ridge. Alicia, before we go, do you have any last words, any last thoughts to share with our listeners?
For anybody that has read the book, I appreciate entrusting my words to be brought into your own life and soul. And I hope that they minister to you as much as they ministered to me and some others. I would just encourage anybody walking through any season of grief, my biggest encouragement to them is to feel complete freedom to face that grief, to feel their grief, and also complete freedom to embrace the truths that guide our lives from the scripture. You can be sad and be content at the same time. You can struggle and have faith at the same time. And so I think that's what I've really come to realize, is that opposites can coexist and we can feel complete freedom to experience those polar opposites at the same time without feeling like we are betraying one or the other or not being enough. So big hugs, everyone.
Absolutely. Oh, here's something. Where can listeners find you online?
Oh yeah. My website is just my name, aliciabozarth.com. And that's where I post my blogs, although there haven't been many recent ones, but there's plenty there for people going through anything with grief or a struggle with faith. I also have a Facebook page, which is Alicia Bozarth Books, and they can follow me there. And you can also sign up for my newsletter. The newsletter, I've actually been experimenting with doing some short stories that I think have had a really good reception. I call it Moments of Grief, where I'll just take a moment of time, a small slip of an experience that you experience in grief. And I kind of turn it into a short story to kind of illustrate in live action, you know, what these things are like. Like, for instance, I think the second one I did was going to the grocery store for the first time. Something small, something that many on the outside wouldn't even realize the enormity of it as you're going in and you're just kind of assaulted with the senses, with the memories. It's just something small, but I put it into a short story and so many people responded and said, thank you. You know, this is what I went through. And this is, you know, I almost had a breakdown in the grocery aisle and, you know, just illustrating those moments. And so I try to take different examples and just turn it into a short story. So if you want to follow my letter, there's a sign up there on my webpage. So yeah, any of those places.
Great. Thank you.
And join us next time when we have Michelle in the hot seat.
Oh, no.
For her new novel, Dancing on My Grave.
Cozy Mystery, Book and Mug Mysteries, number 2.
Book and Mug Mysteries, number 2. That should be exciting.
We hope.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Books on the Ridge, a production of Mount Zion Ridge Press, home of Books Off the Beaten Path. Check our website, www.mountzionridgepress.com, for more information. Please consider subscribing to support this podcast. Plus, receive regular updates and more discounts as our way of saying thanks. Please come back next week for a new discussion with another Mount Zion Ridge Press author. Thanks for listening. We hope you had a good time. We certainly did.